on air, online, on digital, and the ABC Listen app. The Country Hour with Tony Briscoe on ABC Radio Hobart and ABC Northern Tasmania.
And coming up today, locals on welfare accepting farm work, but many not turning up to pick the fruit.
It wasn't until we started doing the physical inductions and then they were asked to turn up on a specific day that we realised that the only reason they were applying for the positions in the first place was because Centrelink was asking them to apply for the positions.
And the huge amounts of rain on the east coast causing some problems for farmers.
Our own vineyard on the east coast, I haven't got an updated number yet because our weather station probably fell over or got washed away, one of the two, but I think we had somewhere between 120 and 130 millimetres. But in areas up in the north of the state, only 15 to 20.
Yeah, lots of rain across the east coast and some figures from the Bureau when we checked the weather at the halfway point of the program. What was in your gauge? 0438 922 936, our text line number, 0438 922 936. Let us know how much rain you got. Nubina, one of the farmers down there, 71 mils by 8:30 this morning. G'day, Tony, with you on this wetter than normal Thursday. We'll look closely at the farm workers and why some locals are applying for jobs, being offered positions, and then not turning up. And also how one farmer thinks the job seeker payments has kept workers away from farms. First up, though, to the rain and the east coast, and St Helens oysters won't be on the menus this Easter, with floodwaters forcing the closure of their growing area. George's River has flooded paddocks and roads around the bay, and it's sending a lot of fresh water across the shellfish farms. The farms are automatically shut for harvesting when too much fresh water flows, bringing with it an increase in nutrients and bacteria. Fiona Breen caught up with St Helens oyster farmer Dan Roden.
We were closed probably halfway through yesterday. Our cut-off and our flow rate in the river is around about 12 cumics. Peaked last night about 250, so it's about 20 times the allowable flow rate down our river. So that means it will be closed and closed for extended periods, so which means we'll miss Easter.
Oh, bugger.
Yeah, it's one of those years. We've had a lot of rain. We've missed a little bit of Christmas. We missed Chinese New Year, and now we'll miss Easter with respect to the rain. So those kind of little peak opportunities throughout the season, which I think oyster farmers, relish. Unfortunately, we've missed this year.
Okay, we'll get to that in a sec. But first, practically, what does that flow mean? And which river is that?
So that's the Georges River. Yeah, so that's the river, the main river that flows into Georges Bay. It brings all our nutrients, which is great, but in flood, it brings a lot of fresh water, which essentially means that our salinity will drop below the allowable limit. It also brings down a lot of nutrients and bacteria, and essentially the water turns brown. It looks like mud at the moment, to be honest, out there. So it'll take a good few weeks for that to purge and get back to the normal pristine environment that we're used to.
And there's quite a lot of oyster farms there, a lot of oysters.
Yeah, a lot of oysters. Yep. I think we're probably around about a quarter of the state production, so unfortunately won't be hitting the tables this Easter.
Okay, and that flow, you say it's 20 times, so is the river wider and just faster and flowing into that bay?
Yeah, it's broken its banks, so literally it's no longer contained within the river banks. It's flowing into the paddocks. All the paddocks are flooded. The road is flooded going in across to Bidalong Bay. So that road is closed, and I'm assuming it'll be probably closed all day. There's quite a lot of water in the paddocks, and it's still coming down. I think, like I said, it peaked at 250, but it's still sitting at around about 200 at the moment. So that's a lot of water that's still got to come down that river. Yeah, it's going to take a little while. I think, thankfully, most of the rain has stopped, so it's just a matter of that working its way out to the ocean now.
Okay, and has that cut off your shore base for your oyster farm?
No, very lucky we've got a back road, Reeds Road, which is another access to Bidalong Bay. It's not a silt track, it's a dirt road. But that allows us to have access to our oyster farm, and obviously allows Binlong Bay residents still to access St Helens.
Now, there's obviously those regulations in the area shut for harvesting, but how will the oysters cope, do you think?
Look, oysters have been evolving for thousands of years with freshwater, so they're pretty used to it. We find that as long as now we just they're down low and we leave them alone and just let them recover and adapt to the conditions, they're generally pretty good. If we have extended periods of low salinity, then that can have an issue. You know, we have had mortality events in the past where we've had, you know, really long extended periods of low salinity, you know, at times where it's almost dropped out to zero, where essentially you're sitting in fresh water. You know, that can be a problem. So, you know, we're hoping without further rain and some good flushing and good winds, then it'll start to recover, you know, pretty quickly in the first sort of 7 to 10 days, and we won't see any mortality.
But Easter missed out on, which is sad for all those oyster lovers. St Helens oysters won't be on the dinner tables.
Yeah, it's a real shame. And look, we know that's a peak as the oyster industry as a whole. So, you know, you've been preparing oysters for the last month and a half, ready to go for this Easter period. You know, it's the biggest, you know, one day of seafood sales in Australia. So, you know, we all obviously love to be a part of it, and we love to have our product on plates. And this year, unfortunately, it's just not going to happen. So hopefully very little mortality will occur, and it's a minor setback. You know, it's primary production. We have to put up with it. We'll just wait for the river to subside, and we'll go out and we'll start farming again.
Okay, and get people to eat oysters beyond Easter and into winter.
It'd be lovely. That's the hope. So yeah, and we're looking. I think hopefully there's a lot of people. You know, now that we're starting to travel, we'll start to get out and about and start visiting, you know, the rest of Australia and particularly northern Queensland over winter. And, you know, we can do quite well if Queensland is doing well.
And you send quite a few there?
Yeah, absolutely. So we do the entire eastern seaboard. So we look at Melbourne, Sydney and Brisbane. And we find Brisbane in particular in the winter is a really good market for us. So hopefully this year... you know, they see a lot of tourism over winter, and that can mean some good sales for us over what traditionally is a quiet period.
It's Dan Roden, St Helens oyster farmer, whose farms are closed due to the floodwaters, and they won't get any oysters out for Easter, talking there to Fiona Breen. And we'll have some more news on the effects of last night's deluge in the second part of today's program. A North Tasmanian farmer who also operates a farm worker employment agency says locals are accepting jobs but simply not turning up for work. Kim Layton runs an apple orchard with partner Troy and detailed how tough it's been trying to find workers and trying to pick the apples.
You know, like everybody else, we knew that we were going to have challenges, and we were having to rethink our whole marketing strategy around how we were going to attract workers into the work sites. But never would I have thought that it was going to be as difficult as what it was. I'm quite an optimistic person, and I thought that it was a perfect opportunity for local workers to dispel the myth out there that local growers don't want local workers. They want backpackers and Pacific Islanders. So we went to the market with that message that this was going to be a perfect opportunity for that myth to be dispelled and for locals to get a real strong foothold in the door with being able to have opportunities on farm.
Kim, have the locals stepped up?
I don't want to knock locals, because we've got some fantastic locals that have stepped up. Without them, we wouldn't be even hanging on by our fingernails at the moment. But for every one local that we have working in our orchard, and also the other, you know, multiple work sites that I have around the state, we probably have to contact 20 to 30 locals to get that one.
Have people accepted jobs and then just not turned up?
Every day of the week. We're now in a position where we get hundreds of applications, and initially pre-Christmas, we were quite excited with the number of applications we were getting, because we thought, you know, this is great, it's working. But it wasn't until we started doing the physical inductions, and then they were asked to turn up on a specific day, that we realised that the only reason they were applying for the positions in the first place was because Centrelink was asking them to apply for the positions, and it's part of their job seeker allowance. They have to. There has to be evidence that they've applied for those jobs.
What about the mutual obligations, though, that they must accept any offer of suitable paid work or have a very good reason why they don't? And penalties are involved then. Have you seen any evidence of that happening?
No. There is no reporting mechanism that we have. There's no vehicle to report back to government, Centrelink, Job Actives, or any government department to essentially say, this person was supposed to start work today and was a no-show. We've contacted them 10 times. They have come back to us and said they don't want the work.
And Centrelink hasn't spoken to you or attempted to have a conversation about some of these workers?
No government department has come back to either myself as the recruitment company or any of our farms that where we supply labour, is anyone being asked to give feedback or name people that should have turned up for work and haven't.
Okay, now you're in a unique situation because you operate an apple orchard as well. You've got a farm and you've got your partner there, Troy Layton. I'll bring Troy in and ask Troy the situation. How do you view it, Troy?
Yeah, look, I suppose there's a lot of interesting discussions to go on between us, but look, it is very difficult to attract people here and get them turning up. But I agree with Kim in that there aren't any repercussions. The number of people that just turn up for one day, don't turn up at all, and don't really give themselves the opportunity, or not prepared to give themselves the opportunity to earn good money. It's just sort of too focused on the first day and the second day, and not realising just know there is some pretty good money to be made. No, at the by the end of the season, once you've got physically conditioned and you've learnt the technique, now we've got a lot of guys out there that are picking their six bins a day. And a perfect example, 15-year-old son, he picked on Saturday and Sunday when he wasn't at school, hadn't picked before, but he picked three bins on his first day and would have picked four on the second day, had he been allowed to, but I knocked him off, because I knew he had to go to school the next day. So that he's earning, so over the weekends, he would have earned $150, $200 a day. And that's a 15-year-old kid. So a 15-year-old kid can do it. There's no reason, plenty of these other locals in their mid-20s or 30s that can't do it either.
So how are you placed for workers? I'm assuming people would be thinking, listening to this, saying that your partner there runs an employment firm, so you wouldn't be worried necessarily about workers. Is that the case?
Well, that I think there's a few out there that might have that perspective, but I can give you an example of just this week. Tuesday, we were supposed to have, I need between 40 and 50 people, to pick us, to turn up each day. We had, I think it was about 28 or 30 people supposed to turn up on Tuesday, and we had 10. So today, we were supposed to have, the girls at Lynx rang around and confirmed that people would be here today. They said there'd be 23 starters plus 9 new ones. Four of the 9 new ones have turned up, and I think only about 16 of the other 23 that have been working here decided to turn up. So, yeah, there's certainly, just because my wife is also my labour supplier, I'm certainly not getting any special treatment there, and I'm the same boat as every other orchard out there. In the north of the state, up the Tamar, they're struggling for workers. The guys out at Sprayton, they're getting by, but I know one of the growers out there, he's on platforms and they don't need picking bags or ladders. He's paying an hourly rate and he still can't get people to stick on hourly rate.
Kim, I'll come back to you and ask you, you've just advertised for more workers. What's been the reaction in the past week since you started advertising?
We've had two people.
How many positions?
Probably anywhere between 150 and 200.
I mean, how many overseas workers do you normally process at this time of the year?
Anywhere up to about 1,400, 1,500.
So how do you resolve that problem?
To be quite honest with you, Tony, I have no idea. I'm normally a really solution-focused person, and if something doesn't work, I can switch to another gear quite quickly and come up with another option. But we're just exhausting everything at the moment. And as much as it's not going to be something that's palatable for people out there listening, I think there's got to be some repercussions to people that can work and aren't working. And instead of encouraging employers to employ locally and giving them cash incentives to do that, there's no point. It's the only options we've got at the moment is to employ locally or Pacific Islanders. A grower doesn't have any choice, so they're wanting locals. They're desperate for locals. The other big problem is a lot of people, a lot of job seekers don't have the luxury of having their own vehicles and having disposable income to pay money on fuel to get to farms, because most farms are in outlying areas. That could be 40 minutes away, 50 minutes away. That consumes a lot of money with fuel. We actually have some buses, and so we were just transporting workers ourselves. And there were some days that there was only two people on the bus. It wasn't commercially viable for us to do it. Transport is a big issue and a big concern. We've got locals that have said we'd like to work, but we've got no way of getting there.
It's Kim and Troy Layton who run an apple orchard in the north of the state. Kim also runs Lynx Employment, a company which sources farm workers for properties across Tasmania. Now, the Country Hour has asked for a statement from the Department of Education, Skills and Employment. What's your take on that story? 0438 922 936, our text line number, 0438 922 936. Well, the elevated job seeker payments are set to end next month, and while welfare advocates are concerned, some farmers are glad to see the end of it. Some farmers believe the coronavirus supplement has been a disincentive to work and contributed to the agricultural worker shortage. Nathan Richardson is chair of the TFGA Vegetable Council. He's told Lachlan Bennett what these elevated job seeker payments meant for farmers.
It means on the ground for farmers what it has meant since the pandemic took hold, and even before that, when the government was having problems with the backpacker tax. It stems right back to that, and it means really they're at a loss financially for produce either left on the tree or on the vine or in the ground. That's what it means.
Farmers have already been under pressure in losing that international workforce. What sort of stories have you heard about trying to get locals in to fill the gaps?
I think any avid listener of the Country Hour can recite the answer to that question, Lachlan. 50 people turn up within a couple of days. There's only a handful left. Farmers citing real concerns that hundreds of thousands of millions of dollars worth of crops going to be left on the tree or on the vine. If the government is hell-bent on handing money out for no reason, really, and disrupting a free market economy and paying people essentially to stay at home, then I think the question needs to be asked. They need to pay for the goods to stay on the tree or in the ground. I mean, that's the only fair alternative. This has been a campaign for nearly 12 months from the agricultural sector right around the country. I mean, there's no bigger issue than workforce in Australia at the moment. And if it gets to a point where a business is doing all they can, but seeing their income rot away or fall on the ground or rot in the ground, then I think it's fair and just that my grandkids dip into their savings a bit more to pay for what's going on at the moment, and that's through government-sponsored disruption of our economy.
So you see a direct link between people not showing up for farm jobs or leaving, you know, 1 or 2 days in and the elevated job seeker payments?
Oh, for sure. I mean, paying people to stay at home, you've only got to look at the broader economy. You can't buy a caravan. You can't buy a motorbike. The used car market is outperforming superannuation funds at the moment. The economy is awash with free cash because people can't travel overseas. It's struggling to go interstate. People are landlocked where they are. If you're staying at home and you're getting paid, why go to work? So what the government should be doing now is, okay, we've paid you to stay at home, now we're going to either pay you to go to work or we're going to pay the producer for the lost produce and income.
People on the other side of the fence would say, we've had a pandemic, it's been a pretty tough time, you know, this is just a way to tide people's over, you know, perfectly reasonable for the government to step in.
Well, the government stepped in about 10 years ago with the GFC. Now they're stepping in again. They step in with other things. But here on the land, if something goes wrong in our business, we very rarely get bailed out. So really, there's got to be a day of reckoning for our economy. Look at house prices. What if if people are struggling, if people are really doing it tough, why is the real estate market in Australia double-digit growth? So there's a lot of indicators to suggest, okay, we've put enough money into the economy, let's look at what is getting left behind. And what is getting left behind is the apples on the tree, is the berries on the vine, is the crops in the paddock.
Given everything you've said, you must be looking forward to the end of those elevated payments. Things might go a little bit back to normal.
I'm not sure. I suppose we'll just have to wait and see. Maybe it will. I can't really see an influx of people turning up to work because the payments are reduced when they've had ample opportunity to go and get a job in the last 12 months, earning far more money than job seeker and job keeper.
So what to do?
We need to be really concerned about one side of politics wanting to introduce a minimum rate instead of piece rate. Simple economics proves that you cannot pay someone $25 an hour to pick $10 worth of produce. That doesn't add up. And the person that's picking $300 worth of produce in an hour is not going to work for $25. So for a political party to suggest that that is a good thing for the workforce is completely insane and would be detrimental to piece rate work all around the country. It makes no sense and it does not add up economically.
People are still struggling this season, but what about looking forward? Is things going to be resolved by next year?
I don't know whether they'll be resolved, but what I can predict is, and what I am telling people, is that there is no better time to get in business. There is no better time to show an interest in agriculture, whether it's dairy, whether it's vegetable production, whether it's intensive grazing, a machinery operation, consultancy, support services. Agriculture is the place to be. Looking forward, I really hope that we can get over this pandemic, get over the workforce issue, and really have a change in mindset in Canberra that is really making people think that every time something goes wrong, Canberra is there to prop them up. And that is a signal in a country that is pretty dangerous, because what's the next problem going to be? How much is that going to cost us? We've already spent, like I said, my grandkids' taxes are now paying for this one. So what's the next one and how can we afford it?
That's Thurlestone farmer Nathan Richardson speaking about the end of the elevated job seeker payments and their impact finding workers, talking to Lockie Bennett. On the other side of the fence, welfare groups, including TASCOS, have condemned the changes and say cutting job seeker was not the way to restore economic confidence in order for Australia to recover from the recession. Your thoughts, 0438 922 936. JobKeeper is also set to wrap up this month after serving as an invaluable lifeline for many Tasmanian oyster growers during the pandemic. When the hospitality industry effectively shut down, the industry lost key markets in Melbourne and Sydney, but the workload for growers increased. Josh Park is the Vice Chair of Oysters Tasmania. He says the removal of the supplement will affect businesses in different ways.
Yeah, when the COVID restrictions came in place March last year, it basically wiped out our Easter harvest, which is our second biggest harvest period of the year. So, yeah, industry-wide, sales just fell off a cliff for a couple of months until, I suppose, our wholesalers found other avenues to market rather than the restaurants, which is the sort of the bulk of where most oysters go to.
How widely was it accessed?
Industry-wide, pretty much. I'm pretty confident most, if not all, farmers access the grants program. So.
And what did the supplement enable growers to do on the farm?
It enabled us to keep people employed. Our product doesn't stop growing just because you stop selling. So, you know, we have to handle them regularly to make sure they're kept in good health. And that just enabled us to keep the critical staff on and make sure our oysters were in good health. So when the markets did open back up, we were able to sell them.
And markets have since recovered, probably not to the same extent as what you were running in 2019. Is there enough cash flow now to keep that full suite of employees on?
Yeah, the market's back to around about 75% of what it was pre-COVID. While that's not ideal, it still enables to sell enough product to to definitely keep the doors open and keep employees on our books. So.
And without JobKeeper, what will that mean?
It'll mean different things to different players within the industry. It's definitely been a benefit, and it's hard to say how it'll affect everyone. You know, my belief is that there's going to be still strong opportunity within the market, so that everyone should have, be able to, you know, sell their oysters and continue to keep those people employed.
And I guess perhaps for those businesses that have had farm gate sales affected, particularly down the East Coast and parts of the Southeast where there's a reliance on that tourist traffic, that must be challenging as well if they haven't, you know, relied on the wholesale market as much.
Yeah, definitely. Some farmers rely mainly or wholly on that. And, they definitely took a big hit when tourism dropped off. Yes, some of the local tourism has helped keep them going. And there still was, like I said, reasonable demand in the domestic wholesale market. So they've probably just had to swing back to doing things a few different ways to get by. But that'd be the same throughout the industry. Everyone's taken a bit of a hit, and I suppose the strategies they've put in place to get them back on track and how they've gone about getting to that point.
Are there other avenues that the oyster industry is pursuing to alleviate some of that financial pressure? I know last year there were fees waived. Is that the approach that the industry is trying to take with the government this year as well?
We've definitely outlined the pressures that COVID had put on, especially in light of our recovery from the Pom's disease that started back in 2016. So we're only just getting back on our feet from that. And, the state government had been really, really helpful in the fee waivers and levy waivers. So without that, you know, that would have led to more job losses possibly. So we've continued to, you know, plead our case as far as where we're at as an industry, and the government are definitely aware of our situation.
So when are those fees for this 2021 season due?
Yeah, they'll be staged throughout the year. There's the option of doing quarterly instalments, and I suppose once the budget's finalised, we'll know more as far as where we stand with that.
There's a fair bit of rain coming through. What are you hearing from growers about what they're having to do before the official shutdowns come into force?
Yeah, well, the rainfall's largely unpredictable in the south due to the style of the system coming through. So within the company I work at, we've gone ahead and harvested everything a day earlier than what we normally would, just to make sure that that rainfall doesn't affect the area. Or the status of the area, and our customers are left with stock for Easter. Different regions have different environmental triggers that cause them to open and close, and so they would be making similar decisions, or would have made similar decisions already as far as harvesting a bit earlier. The only problem is that reduces the shelf life once it gets to the end customer. But you know, this is Easter time. There's generally good demand about, so I'd expect all those oysters would be consumed quite comfortably.
Oysters Tasmania Vice Chair Josh Polk speaking there to Larissa Smith about the end of the JobKeeper payments. Time now to check the latest on the weather with Belinda House from the Bureau. G'day, Belinda.
Good afternoon.
I'm imagining it's been a very busy period for you. Plenty of rainfall about.
Look, we had some very significant rain falling down the east coast in particular. To the 24 hours to 9 a.m. this morning, Grey picked up 275 millimetres in that 24-hour period. St Patrick's Head, 180. Orford got 120 millimetres. Tryabunna, Pine Gannet and Friendly Beaches all got over 100 millimetres. And then the southeast Mount Wellington picked up 91 millimetres. But since 9 o'clock, it has all started to peter out. We've seen a further 6 millimetres at Tasman Island on the southeast, but otherwise the rainfall focus has shifted off to the west, with Mount Reid picking up 11 millimetres, Luncheon Hill and Scott's Peak both picking up 7 millimetres there. So very much an easing trend on those showers today. So showers across the state for us today, but they will contract back to the west and far south come this evening time. Rainfall figures for the remainder of the day, 5, maybe up to 10 millimetres is all you're going to see out of the west and south of the state. Elsewhere, 1 or 2 millimetres is really all you're expecting to see. Then on Friday, we will see showers about the west and far south, and they are going to extend across the north in the afternoon with fine conditions elsewhere. West and northwesterly winds will tend around to north to northwesterly in the evening time. Then on Saturday, we've got a front across the state in the morning on Saturday, so showers are going to extend statewide before contracting back to the west, far south and Bass Strait Islands in the evening time. Fresh and gusty north-northwesterly winds will tend northwest and westerly during the morning with the passage of that front. Then on Sunday, showers about the west, far south and Bass Strait Islands. They'll push into the central parts and the southeast come evening time with fine conditions elsewhere and fresh westerly winds. Then on Monday, a moderating trend with those showers about the west, south and Bass Strait Islands, but they will ease with the expectation of clearing later in the day on Monday with fine conditions elsewhere and fresh west to southwesterly winds are expected to ease during the day on Monday. So 4-day rainfall totals for the period Friday to Monday night. The north of the state looking up to 10 to 20 millimetres through the west, 20 to 60 millimetres there with the focus of that rainfall coming into the west with those predominantly westerly winds returning, and the east to southeast of the state you're talking 2 to 5 millimetres only. So the focus will shift to the west for the coming days.
Okay, warnings. What have we got?
Look, we have fewer warnings than we had yesterday and this morning, but what remains, we still have a moderate flood warning out for the South Esk and Macquarie Rivers. A final flood watch has been issued for the Furneaux Islands, northeast, east coast, southeast Derwent and Huon catchments out on the waters. We've got a gale warning current for the lower eastern and southeastern waters from Wineglass Bay to southeast Cape and through Bang Strait as well, and that's for westerly winds. We have a strong wind warning current for all remaining coastal waters, and that includes Storm Bay and the channel.
Terrific. Okay, that's it, Belinda.
Thank you.
Thank you, Belinda House from the Bureau with all the details for you. What have we got on the text line? Hi, Artie. Farmers that want a true free market, you might want to think about that statement. Farmers and loggers seem to get more help from government than most general businesses. That's from Tracy. Thanks, Tracy. Gail from West Hobart says, these farmers have no idea regarding what these job seekers have to go through when they take a short-term job with the farms. Farmers certainly want their cake and eat it too. The housing market is so buoyant because of boomers having excess income and the wealthy buying up properties because bank interest rates are so low. It is laughable that it's also said they do not get help from the government. Thank you, Gail. Carlton, Shelley from Carlton says 115 mils they've had there. And another text, listener from the Huon Valley says, Tony, please stop laying the guilts on the unemployed. Most of us are doing the right thing. Every show you lambast is hard to listen to. Well, I'm sorry you think that way. I don't feel that way towards the people who are doing the right thing. And I'm very supportive of anyone who wants to go out there and get a job. And if you really do want a job, the jobs are there. Phil says he's had 39.6 mils in the past 36 hours at Old Beach. Thanks for that, Phil. Okay, in a moment we'll have a look at the East Coast and what the rain's been doing. This is the Tasmanian Country Hour.
This week on Landline, boom time for berries in Tasmania.
I think that's possibly because they recognise that Tasmania is a perfect climate for a summer berry.
And the good and the bad of the red hot cattle market.
If you would have looked at the market about a year ago or 2 years ago, probably would have got a quarter of what I got today.
That's Landline, 12:30 Sunday on ABC TV and 3 p.m. in Western Australia.
It's the Country Hour with Tony Briscoe on ABC Radio Hobart and ABC Northern Tasmania.
Yeah, 0438 922 936, that text line number. If you do wish to make your thoughts known, we will put them over the air. 0438 922 936. Lots of rainfall across the east coast of Tasmania in the past 24 hours, as we just heard from the Bureau. Let's hear from a couple of farmers like Vigneron Marty Smith from Absolute Viticulture.
Pretty significant, Tony, at our own vineyard on the east coast. I haven't got an updated number yet because our weather station probably fell over or got washed away, one of the two, but I think we had somewhere between 120 and 130 millimetres. But in areas up in the north of the state, only 15 to 20. So hugely variable from what I'm hearing across the state.
So how does that affect your particular paddocks of vines?
It kind of depends where they are. I mean, it's not ideal, the rainfall. There can be issues with split of the fruit and also a bit of dilution of the sugar levels in the grapes. But we're hoping there's no horror stories out there, Tony. It's probably more just rescheduling harvest. with the wineries and probably only push things back a day or two at the most, hopefully.
When are you picking?
We've got one of our harvesters going in the north this morning on some flatter country. Some of the hillier sites around the state might have to wait a couple of days, but all going well, we'll have both harvesters up and running again tomorrow, hopefully.
How busy are you expecting to be over the next few weeks?
Very busy, Tony. We've been very busy up to date, actually. We've been extremely fortunate. The ripening conditions here this season have been brilliant. We've had some fantastic, you know, mild, sunny days, and a lot of the fruit has come in earlier than what we expected. So some of our clients were almost finished harvesting their vineyards already, actually. So I think we've covered 250 hectares so far with the harvesters, which has only been going for 3 weeks, really.
Are you finding more vignerons are looking to you and your mechanical harvesters to get their fruit off with the lack of workers around?
Yeah, we are, Tony. With two harvesters running now, both harvesters have been running nearly every day, and we get more and more inquiries, but for us it's just having a bit of a lack of time, really. But yeah, the labour shortage is one thing, but also the cost efficiency of having a mechanical harvester, you know, where our clients are seeing huge savings of up to 70 to 80% compared to manual labour. And just with weather events like this well forecasted in advance, it meant that, you know, we were going all through the night as well, just trying to get the grapes off before the rain actually hit.
And how's the swan looking? Have you seen it today?
I haven't seen it today, mate. I'm up in Launceston at the moment, but talking to my neighbours down there, very full would be the best way to say that. I think we had a very significant flood in 2016, and I think it's probably rivaling that. The last figure I saw from the department water meter was flowing at about 40,000 megalitres per day, which is very significant. So there'll be some flooding down there. I think the Tasman Highway was shut last night on the east coast, but I think it's all reopened again now.
Good for the dams, though.
Yeah, good for the dams, mate. Well, we certainly won't be putting any irrigation on anytime soon. But, yeah, good for the dams, good for the irrigation scheme as well to top up the scheme dam. So there's certainly some positives out there.
And you're in a lovely part of the world, I believe, at Cromies. Is that where you are?
Yeah, one of our harvesters are at Cromies at the moment. We've got our gun operator on that at the moment. We've almost finished at Joseph Cromie, actually. We've picked almost their whole vineyard in 2.5 weeks. So that's a good sight out there. Their fruit looks fantastic this year. And we should be finished at that vineyard early next week, all going well.
All right, Marty. I'll better let you get back to it, and thanks for your time.
No worries at all, Tony.
Yeah, Marty Smith, a vigneron from Tasmania's East Coast on the rain and the harvest, and currently up at Cromies in the Tamar Valley doing the mechanical picking. Well, at Bichonneau, Pauline Anderson also runs a small vineyard and has just measured what was in the gauge.
I just tipped out 110 mil.
Did that cause any problems for you with the vineyard?
No, we're not quite ready to pick yet, so I do feel for the vineyards that are halfway through picking. Yeah, we can't pick while the grapes are wet, so we're a couple of weeks away, so we just want some sunshine now.
What was it like, those weather conditions overnight? Did it keep you awake?
Oh, on and off. Yes, it did. Yeah, it was pretty windy, and yeah, there's a lot of water around.
And what are you hearing from other farmers in the area? Any problems around Bichonneau that you know of?
I know that they had over 200 mil in grey, so that will come down the Apsley River and maybe cause a little bit of flooding, but it usually does take a couple of days to come down and sort of filter through.
And it's a nervous wait before you pick the grapes, I'm imagining, and you're worried about the weather. You hope it settles down, obviously.
Yeah, definitely. It's been a really weird season, so I'll be really happy once they're off and I can close the gate and have a couple of weeks off.
What about pickers? Have you got enough? Is it all family members, is it?
Oh, I used to get friends and, yeah, have a few hands go up in the air when picking days on, and barbecue and a beer, and a yak.
Well, good luck with it.
Thank you, Tony.
That's Pauline Anderson from Overtime Vineyard at Bishano on the rainfall figures overnight. Keep them coming, 0438 922 936. Let us know what's in your gauge, what you got. 0438 922 936 is that number. Well, certainly no one in Tasmania got the amount of rain they did on the mainland. And as floodwaters peak in the northwest of New South Wales today, farmers surrounding Moree are starting to get a better idea of the impact on crops and also on livestock. While everyone's thoughts are with the townships, farmers are largely seeing positives from the recent weather. From tractors to choppers, grain growers, livestock producers and agronomists, they've all been busy getting intelligence. Lara Webster has more.
For sheep producer Justin Kirkby, it's been a busy morning checking stock and fences. Now floodwaters surrounding him are starting to recede.
Yeah, the amount of rain that we've had has been phenomenal, and luckily, apart from our road in, which the runoff comes from other parts of the country, it was very silted. So I had to take Jock, our youngest boy, down to the front gate to catch the bus for school on the tractor because of the amount of silt that's in our creek crossing. But farm-wise, we've got a lot of grass because we've had a little bit of rain before the big rain event came. We've got sort of a good ground cover and a lot of grass in the paddock, so the runoff's been sort of, thus far from my travelling around the farm checking, has been minimal. So we sort of thought we might have lost some fences in a rather big way, but I think the rainfall was heavy, but the fact that we've got a bit of ground cover and stuff has stopped it from sort of running too fast.
What about your sheep? You produce Dorpers. Tell me how your livestock are coping with things.
Thus far, travelling around, they seem okay. They've got a lot of feed, and we've destocked a lot through the drought. We were a little bit mindful of the volume of water that was possibly coming, and we shifted them out of low-lying country so that if there was a lot of water coming through, they didn't get caught up in it, or we lose fences and then they sort of wander around too far.
What have you seen overnight and today? You mentioned you'd had some phenomenal rain and there's quite a bit of water around. Just how much water have you seen?
Like, we ended up with 162 mils for the 24 hours, and we've got a front paddock. We're not on the river itself, but the volume of water that came down through our place at our front gate where we have a creek crossing, we've never seen before. I know that the water that came through the Gravesend Bridge, which is one of the flood indicator places, it went across the two approaches either side of the bridge, and that did that back in the last La Nina back in 2012. So there's been a lot of water, but it was local water as well as runoff water. But around the farm, it's not too bad. We haven't seen too much problems other than, just a bit of fencing. It's a stark contrast from 2 years ago, and they all say that it takes a good flood to break a good drought.
Sheep producer Justin Kirkby speaking there. Local agronomists are also busy touching base with their clients to get a better sense of crop damage. Tim Poole has been busy flying over farmland to get a better picture of the impacts so far.
Oh, sheets of water, absolutely tremendous amounts of water. It's pretty spectacular what we've got going on out there. Certainly bringing some issues, but also some huge benefit with it.
So talk us through, Tim, the issues and the benefits that you're starting to get a sense of now that we're, a few days into things, we're expecting the river to peak today. Sort of what is the sense you're getting now?
I guess for the irrigated cotton growers, it was a small plant this year, but a lot of those crops are near maturity, and we're expecting some significant losses there, particularly bole rots and things like that are going to get into those. Ongoing flooding and high humidity associated with it after that rain. But the dryland summer crops, as far as the grain crops go, were largely harvested. There are some late mung beans around, which I think also will cop some damage. But overall, really beneficial as we head into as we head in towards the winter crop. The soil profiles weren't universally full across, particularly north and west of Moree, but after this rain, it's really boosted the outlook there. Just when it dries out enough to get onto things. And for the irrigators, absolutely tremendous. A lot of them are getting close to filling their farm storages from both local water and the supplementary pumping that they've been allowed. in the last couple of days.
So certainly setting things up really well for winter planting.
Set up beautifully for winter planting. So, you know, a good result last year from our winter crops. So it'll be great to start this year with good outlooks and setting up production for the irrigators for a couple of years with Copeton Dam now 36% or 37% this morning.
Mm. I mean, as you've said, there will be some crop losses, crop disease from what's currently in the ground, but in the big scheme of things, will hopefully the winter plant, I mean, we never know what a season will bring, but hopefully will that, you know, balance out any losses that are seen from this flood, do you think?
Oh, well and truly, not downplaying the impact on those who've been flooded, particularly infrastructure and things like that, but the overall benefit to the ag sector in the district's been huge.
And, Tim, I couldn't let you go. I had seen a photo of your children's cubby house. It, too, has some very nice riverfront views, should we say.
It sure does. It was a bit concerning as the water was coming in around it, but it seems to be steady here in Moray at the moment. But, yeah, the kids are having a great deal of fun on their houseboat, as they're now calling it.
The houseboat, yeah. Moray agronomist Tim Poole ending that report from Lara Webster on flooding around the Moray area. Further south across Bass Strait at Gippsland, the roads have been cut, power out, school closed, but farmers have welcomed the rain. Now, this story is on our ABC Rural Facebook page. A couple of comments about that. Lee says farmers are the embodiment of resilience. Jenny says the dams are full, life can begin again, and it's filling the aquifer. Margaret says, great. And Mike says, love it. So plenty of positives out of that with the flooding there at Gippsland. Irene on our text line says 45 mils in suburban Howrah. Thanks for that, Irene. And Clayton at Tinderbox. G'day, Clayton. Good to hear from you. 60 millimetres at Tinderbox. So they're just some of the texts coming through. 0438 922 936. In a moment, we'll find out what's happening with shearers' pay cuts. This is the Tasmanian Country Hour.
Liberals have the numbers to dump me.
Mornings with Leon Compton.
Bring it on if that's what you want to do.
Dissecting the political landscape.
He has really released me from this bullshit of the last 3 years.
Airing your thoughts.
Inbound text.
Happy to get elected using a party base and team, but then only cares about personal gain. Could have run as an independent, says Dean. The Liberal Party has a big problem with independent women. Bring on the next state and federal election, says Jess this morning via text.
Leon Compton. Weekday mornings on ABC Radio Hobart.
On air, online, on digital, and the ABC Listen app. This is the Country Hour with Tony Briscoe on ABC Radio Hobart and ABC Northern Tasmania.
And on our text line, hearing from Rob from Cunha. Hi, Tony. Love the Country Hour. Look forward to hearing it so much. But just then I heard you reply to someone who wasn't happy with your comments regarding farm jobs. Irrelevant to what they said, your retort, there are jobs out there if you want one, was misplaced. I'm a tradie, I'm never out of work, but a couple of years ago I felt I would like to have a change. Pick some fruit like I did 30 years ago while travelling Australia. I was pretty much told to pee off as I was too old for many Huon farms, and it was cheaper to use backpackers. Why do you think no one wants to work on these farms? Read the bad stories. The farmers need to reap what they've sown, from Rob. Thanks for that, Rob. Appreciate the thoughts. Well, the Shearing Contractors Association of Australia says it will continue to recommend its members pay shearers 15% above the award rate. Association Secretary Jason Letchford says the recommendation was only meant to last 60 days and aimed to put an end to the bidding war for shearers, fuelled by a lack of New Zealand workers due to the COVID outbreak. Jason Letchford told Lucas Forbes he's heard from members that the recommended price seems to have stabilised supply and demand in the market.
The market hasn't changed. So as we, you know, most of your listeners have heard that there's effectively it's supply and demand. There's a shortage of shearers. And we were somewhat calling it a trial because we were wondering when what the New Zealand seasonal workers were going to do and when they were going to arrive in the country. And we didn't want to jump the gun and make our members uncompetitive with recommending a 15% above award increase. So it was really just a case to see if people were going to adopt it, and they certainly have done at a wholesale level. There's exceptions in areas that haven't, mainly in the fat lamb areas of the country. But as a you know, as a general, generalised sweeping statement that most have done it. And it's now a case that the New Zealanders haven't arrived yet. We didn't really think they would be at this point in time, but it's the next checkpoint is around about towards the end of June, where the New Zealanders will certainly have finished their domestic season over there. And this increased pay rates, be it through our recommended rate system or just really in the open market, what impact that'll have to the supply of those New Zealand workers.
I mean, so what has it accomplished and how do you know it's accomplished that?
Just, you know, it's all anecdotal feedback, but what we're getting is stability. So what was happening, especially, I know most of your listeners, well, the South Australian listeners may disagree, but it was originally the merino areas, which so the northern parts of South Australia and, you know, right across laterally across to New South Wales, where you had more traditional merino sheep that a shearer may be shearing, you know, 120, 130, 140 a day. And they could be drawn away to these higher amounts of money, which in the southern state was in Victoria, where the money was being offered at a great amount. And what happened is that districts would lose workers and they wouldn't get them back because they had to offer above award rates, which they couldn't do on a wholesale level, because if they paid one worker above that award rate, they need to pay all their workers above that. And they couldn't get the workers back. But what this did is it effectively stopped the FOMO, the fear of missing out factor, where workers were always looking at, you know, Facebook or social media or getting phone calls to say, let's go and work somewhere else. And workers would leave that district.
How did different states adopt this recommendation? Was there much of a difference between your members in different states?
Yeah, there was, Lucas. I'll say broadly, New South Wales adopted it straight away, being, you know, based on predominantly merino-based or traditional merino-based flock there. The Tasmania, basically zero contractors adopted. They were all still in the award, but it reflects down there, you know, in the timeframes we're talking about, it's been lambing or shearing of fat lambs or shearing of lambs down there. Western Australia, it didn't get adopted over there, based more on drought, that they'd lost a lot of their flock. Well, they'd certainly lost significant enough percentage that actually went east to, you know, where the better climatic conditions have been for the last, you know, 6 months or 12 months. So they've lost volume over there. South Australia was certainly the South Australia and Victoria were the split states, and the pay rates sort of followed the lines where if you had fat lambs to shear, you stuck to the award, and if you had traditional merinos to shear, then they were generally getting offered that 15%.
That's Shearing Contractors Association of Australia Secretary Jason Letchford speaking to Lucas Forbes on the shearers' pay rates, and the association saying it will continue to recommend its members pay shearers 15% above the award rate, mainly fueled by the lack of New Zealand workers, and mainly on the mainland. The situation isn't happening across the board in Tasmania at the moment, and it's just a sign of the times, isn't it? And just for Rob to clarify, when I did say there are jobs out there if you want one, what I meant by that, Rob, was that there are jobs out there if you want one on the farms where there are apples, where there are berries. There's certainly jobs out there, and as one of our earlier people on the program who runs an employment agency stated, that 1,500 less workers from overseas that they've had to deal with this year because of the pandemic. So there's certainly some jobs out there if you're really looking forward to doing some work. On the program tomorrow, we'll, of course, being a Friday, have Richard Bailey with all the details of the livestock markets, and Richard will have details of what's happening on the mainland as well. Don't forget to go to our ABC Rural Facebook page. Plenty of stories there and more stories online at ABC Rural. Thanks for that today. We'll catch you after midday tomorrow.